You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Every hack follows the same pattern. First, hackers exploit a human error, like a leaked key or a secret left in code. They gain a foothold and then pivot, moving from one compromised system to the next. Teleport breaks this cycle. Open source Teleport gives every engineer, every piece of hardware, every application an identity, replacing secrets like passwords and keys with auto-expiring identity-based certificates. Learn why the most visionary businesses in the world choose Teleport at goteleport.com. Welcome to this episode of the Shared Security Show, and joining me this week are my two co-hosts, Scott Wright and Kevin Johnson. And we are also joined by the author of Ruse, Lying the American Dream from Hollywood to Wall Street, Robert Kerbeck. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Wow, I am so excited to be here. And I have three interviewers. I'm really nervous.
Yes, this is a panel interview.
Don't worry.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say just great book. I just recently finished it and really enjoyed learning all about your adventures of being a corporate spy. And before we really get into the interview, I did want to ask one big question, since I learned in your book that you had a brief role in the TV show Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Now, Kevin here, he's a fan of a certain sci-fi series, but I want to know, in your opinion, Star Trek or Star Wars, which is better?
Oof. Oh, man, that's such a great question. I'm going to have to say neither. I definitely would not pick Star Wars because some of those early movies were pretty rough. But they did redeem themselves with a couple of the later movies, I thought.
Okay.
And Star Trek, you know, I really liked the original series, and Next Generation I thought was fantastic. Deep Space Nine, I'm not a fan of, even though I was on the show. Which means they're definitely never bringing me back on any Star Trek show ever.
ever.
But I do have a Star Trek collectible card, which is pretty cool. Ooh. So, I could take that to my grave that they made a Star Trek card of me.
That was a great, a safe answer. I like that.
It was a safe answer. Yeah. It was definitely a social engineering answer.
The Big Bang Theory. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is I kind of trashed both shows. So, you know, you can see why my acting career might not have panned out. Maybe I should have been a little bit more political.
No, I'm not a good political person. I say what you think.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
They're giving you crap because I belong to the 501st. So we build screen accurate Star Wars costumes. And if I was actually at the office, but I'm not, there would be a Star Wars costume of some type on a mannequin behind me.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. That is Kevin's hobby. I mean, passion. So
my wife says it's the nerdiest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a writer. So writers in general are nerds. And so I have a lot of writer friends that are huge Star Wars people and Star Trek people.
So speaking of writing, so what inspired you to write your memoir? And I have to ask the bigger question, I think, is are you still rusing and are you still in that corporate spying game?
Well, I wouldn't be a very good corporate spy if I wrote a book about corporate spying and continued to spy.
You could still do it.
Yeah, I guess you could. The job was already dangerous as it was. And I think, you know, now that I've outed myself, I think it would be really crazy. But I have to tell you, I get emails regularly from major corporations today saying, we loved your book. Would you be willing to spy for us?
Wow.
Right. Which I think is pretty incredible, right? Because it's like, I've just written the book about what I did, how it's certainly unethical, borderline illegal, you know, or illegal, depending on what I'm doing and what I'm saying on a given day. And yet these corporations could care less. They could care less. They want the information. Even today, when we've, you know, crossed over into this era where everything is, you know, you're getting it via technology, And most of the rusing I did was, you know, old fashioned over the phone. But even today, I could pick up the phone, and trust me, I can get you to answer your phone. I have tricks to do that. And then all of a sudden, I'm going to portray myself. I'm going to have some story. I'm going to have some ruse. I'm going to be an executive offsite whose name you recognize. And maybe you met them once at a conference and you know they're a major executive with the firm, but yeah, you don't know them that well. And they have this story that there's a problem. They're meeting with the regulators, the compliance officers, the SEC, whatever story I come up with based on the research that I would do. And you're going to go, oh my God, this is a crisis. I got to help this guy out. And you would tell me whatever I wanted to know. So even today, that kind of spying goes on all the time. And that's why these corporations, you know, they're just willing to spend so much money because they want to know anything and everything they can about their competitors. And of course, what's gone a step further now is ransomware, right? So these ransomware attacks are often, maybe even most of the time, there's social engineering that is also utilized as part of that attack, right? Because if I can call someone and trick someone on the inside into telling me their password or logging in for me, you know, any of these kind of tricks using social engineering to get somebody on the inside to do the dirty work for you, it just makes all of that kind of work so much easier, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. So I'm kind of interested just to, maybe you can talk a little bit about how your acting career really kind of led you into becoming, you know, that corporate spy and then, you know, working in the, eventually you ended up in recruiting, right? Corporate recruiting and all of that towards the end of the book. But I'm just interested to hear like your take on, you know, how acting has really kind of helped you in your career.
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia and, my family is well known in the car business, the Kerbeck automobile family. My great grandfather sold horse carriages before cars were invented. My grandfather took over that dealership. My father took over that dealership, and I was supposed to take over that dealership. And when I was in college at the University of Pennsylvania, I kind of fell in love with acting. And when I graduated, I really wanted to move from Philadelphia to New York to try to be an actor, but I didn't know anybody that had done that. It seemed crazy to me. And so I went and worked for my father in the family car business. And it just wasn't for me. The kind of dishonesty and trickery of car sales, it just didn't feel right for me, which, of course, is pretty ironic that I leave car sales for that reason and then move to New York and I need a survival job. And who stumbles into a job as a corporate spy? But that's exactly what happened.
Interesting. So your first boss, Leona, I wanted to bring this up because, you know, how significant was that relationship to you and how did just, you know, working with her and how did that help develop your skills? Because I kind of thought of it as like almost a mentorship type of relationship. And I'm just curious to know how that really helped you gain those skills and meet other people in your rusing career.
Yeah. So Leona was a very rare woman at the time. You know, she, was basically working on Wall Street, but you know, Wall Street was a very difficult place for anybody that wasn't a, you know, proverbial straight white man. And so, you know, she was never going to have the kind of opportunities that, you know, today a woman would be able to have. And so she kind of went out on her own and started this research business, which of course was a euphemism for corporate spying. And she was smart enough to realize that she needed to hire actors because actors would be great at the lying and the creating stories, creating characters, creating accents. And so she only hired actors. And indeed, when I got the job from Leona, she only hired women because she thought women made better spies than men. And for a long time, she was right. The women that did the job were far better at it than my buddy who got me the job. We were the only two men that she had ever hired. And for years after us, she only hired women. So, you know, Leona was great. I mean, she was really smart, but she was tough. You know, she was tough because, you know, she had made it in a world that was very difficult for women to excel in. And she had this multi-million dollar business supplying this, you know, stolen data to other major Wall Street firms, you know. And so she was very connected on Wall Street. She knew all the players. Which, you know, she was tough. She was really tough. So I don't know if mentor is kind of the right term that I would use for her,
yeah.
You know, because nowadays your mentor is supposed to be kind of kind and loving. And she and yeah. she was kind and loving in a lot of ways, but she was also tough. You know, I talk about how in the book, when we started doing this spying, and your audience will probably laugh at this, we were paid $8 an hour. Okay. So here we are spying, lying, stealing information from major firms for $8 an hour. And we were just so naive and innocent because we just wanted to be actors. It was just a survival job. We weren't going to be doing it for that long. I had no idea I was going to turn into a $2 million a year business and that I was going to be hunted by the authorities, let alone that I was going to write a book about it that now is being turned into a TV series, right? I had none, you know, I was just $8 an hour. I need a job.
So talk a little bit about like corporate spying today. I guess, I mean, it's obviously very different in some ways than it was in the 1980s and 1990s. But we have LinkedIn now, right? We've got all these social networks where, you know, people are publicly posting information about their hierarchy of, you know, who they work with and executives and all those things. So is there still a need for this type of information that you would find over the phone?
Well, based on the emails that I get weekly from people asking me to do the same kind of work that I did back, you know, back in the day, the answer is yes, because, you know, and there was one interview, I forget who it was, maybe it was the New York Post, said that, you know, I was LinkedIn before LinkedIn was invented, right? And it was kind of true, because before LinkedIn, there was no way you could learn the hierarchy of a company, who ran the groups, who the rock stars were in the group, you know, what the groups did, all of that kind of information. And you know, you can imagine how valuable, you guys kind of know how valuable that information is, but sometimes people outside, they don't understand that, you know, if you can steal, you know, the top two people on a team or the number three person on a team, and now you bring them to your firm, not only do they come, they bring the secrets that they have, right? And you basically get a competitive advantage on your big rival because now you poach their top people. And so what we would do, and what I think you can still do, is all corporations, almost all corporations, have internal metrics that they use to rank their employees. And sometimes it's salary, though that's not always a direct barometer, because sometimes somebody's making more because they've been there longer. They're not necessarily doing better than, you know. So there are all these different metrics, and we would learn how the companies rank their people. And so we wouldn't just supply the organizational chart. We would supply it with the rankings of these individuals. So if it was a sales team, we would have their production. If it was tradings, we would have the, you know, who had the biggest trades. If they were bankers, we would have the size of their book of business. If they were asset managers, we would know who had the most assets under management, right? And we would have all of these things so competitors could go, okay, these are the people we need to steal because, and we would get their salaries too. So we would go, look at this person. They're making this much money, but they're only getting paid this. They are ripe for plucking, right? And so then you would steal that person. And again, a lot of times people are outside the business. They don't understand how valuable, what a game changer that is. And so sometimes the analogy I use is, you know, Steve Jobs, legendary CEO of Apple, would not list his designers in the corporate directory for fear of them being stolen. Imagine if you had poached one of the original iPad designers in the early days and brought him over to your firm. How much money might that have been worth? Geez.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Almost difficult to track. I mean, it's almost impossible to think how much that would be worth. Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, the spying is still very valuable today because even on LinkedIn, I'm here to tell you, I'd say 60% of executives are on LinkedIn. And 40% are not, because most people, if you're successful at your firm, you're killing it at your firm, you are sick of being bothered, you're sick of getting calls, you're sick of getting direct messages. And so eventually you get a new job, you don't even update your LinkedIn, or you move within the firm and you don't update your new position because you don't care because you're doing great, right? So LinkedIn is, you know, maybe about 2/3 accurate, and the big corporations, the big executive search firms, when they're going out and trying to steal people, are they trying to steal the person at the bottom of the team? No. Are they trying to steal the person in the middle of the team? No. They want those 40%, 30% of people that aren't on LinkedIn. That's what they want.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
So I loved hearing about all the different famous people and actors and other people that you encountered while you were an actor. One in particular was O.J. Simpson. Can you talk a little bit about that story?
Yeah. So, you know, I was doing this spying job. Like I said, it was $8 an hour and I was a working actor. You know, I wasn't just, you know, saying I was an actor or trying to be an actor. I had an agent. I was getting big jobs on TV shows and movies. I have a pension from the Screen Actors Guild. And I was very close to, you know, making it a number of times. I booked like 4 pilots. None of them ever went to series, which is kind of then, you know, you needed to get a series and the series needed to go to really have to get a real career, right? To get some name recognition. And so during the years where I was kind of trying to get to that level, my manager called me one day and he said, "Hey, there's this exercise video and they need a couple guys. They're paying some good money. Are you interested?" And I'm like, "No, man. First of all, I'm the worst dancer ever." So like, you know, me going in and doing this exercise video, I said, "No, not interested." And he's like, "Okay, well, it was with O.J. Simpson." I said, "What? Wait, O.J. Simpson?" He said, "Yeah, it's an exercise video. It's for guys. It's not going to be dancing. You're going to be doing push-ups. You're going to play pickup basketball. You're going to do some crunches." I was like, "Okay, I'm in. O.J. Simpson, I'm there," right? Because, you know, I had grown up. I mean, he was even a little bit before my time. But, you know, I still knew who he was. And, of course, you know, Monday Night Football, he was the announcer and he did movies. And so I go and I do this exercise video with O.J. Simpson. And we shot for 3 days. And there was dancing involved. And I'm pretty sure I would have been fired, except that OJ was happy to have me because my dancing made him look good. Right? and I swear to God, it's like one of the things in Hollywood that, again, your listeners may not know is if you make the star look good, you're golden, right? Yeah. You know, you're in, right? You know, if the star likes a particular makeup artist or likes a particular caterer, like, That person is golden. And so because my dancing was so bad and I made OJ look so good, they couldn't fire me. And for some reason, OJ really took a liking to me on the set. He was incredibly friendly. At one point, he shows me, he says, "Hey, Rob, come over here. I want to play the, I just did this pilot for NBC. It's called Frogman. And it's about Navy SEALs." And so he pops, it was, you know, he had a video cassette of it. He pops, like, I guess he carried it around with him. Pops the video cassette in the player. This is, you know, this is how long ago it was. It's like mid 90s. And the show was so rough. It was really not very good. And so he has to kind of explain everything to me. And all of a sudden he says, "Oh, this is my character. He's a knife expert."
Okay.
I live in his pool house.
Right. Yeah. Can you believe that? Like, I mean, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. He had just shot a pilot where he played a knife expert. Right. Anyway, so you can imagine my shock and surprise when a week or 10 days, I forget what it was, later after shooting this video with OJ, he's in the Bronco, you know, trying to escape to Mexico on the 405 freeway with a bag of cash and disguises in the back.
That's funny.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And then later, you know, it's like OJ would not leave me alone. Like, he has followed me for 20 years. First, there were all these people, because remember back in the day, there was no, you know, footage of this, that, you know, there was no TMZ. And so I was getting calls all the time. People wanted to know what had happened on that set, what I had witnessed. And I did witness some things. I witnessed him sexually harassing a woman. I witnessed him saying things that you could never in a million years say on a set today. You could never say in any workplace today. And then, of course, afterwards, that trial was introduced into evidence, because part of OJ's defense was that he was too infirm to kill anybody, let alone two people. And I'm here to tell you, I was, you know, 30 years old in the best shape of my life. And OJ, you know, standing next to him, I'm 6'1", I weighed 180 pounds. I was like a twig next to an oak, right? you know, like if you know, if we had been in the cage, you know, I would have been murdered in like 15 seconds, right?
Yeah.
So, and then of course, finally, they did the TV series in 2015, The People versus OJ Simpson, with Cuba Gooding as OJ, and they recreated the exercise video for the series, which meant an actor got paid to play me.
That's awesome.
They didn't call you up for that one.
No, they didn't. Oh, no, they didn't.
Bummer.
No, they didn't. I know. I know. It was pretty. It was pretty. And my, when my wife showed it to me, you know, she saw and she yelled, because I'm like, I never want to see anything with OJ again. But she yelled, you know, come down, come down. And I went down and she replayed it. And I literally fell onto the ground. I was laughing so hard.
But wow.
Have you that's met hilarious. The actor who played you?
No, I did not. And you know,
I would want.
Well, yeah. And I don't really, you know, I have to say, I don't think much of this actor, because if he was serious about his work, he would have called me and asked me, what was I thinking in those moments when I was doing those bad dance moves?
Maybe it was so obvious what you were thinking. Why am I doing this?
Yeah. Yeah.
So is acting, I was just going to ask, is acting the best preparation for becoming a rooster, or what other professions have you seen people do a good job at?
Yeah. I mean, I think for sure, you know, and especially because look, there are, people are doing cons all the time that didn't go to acting class. Right. But the difference with this is we weren't just doing cons. We were creating characters. We were using accents, you know, and everybody had an accent that they kind of did best. And, you know, like we could all do a lot of accents, but everybody had like their go-to. And so mine was German accent. So I go, oh yeah, this is Gerhard calling from the office in Frankfurt. They have the European Union regulators here this week and they need some information. Now, when you pick up the phone and you have this guy with this German accent on the phone, is anybody thinking that, wait a second, maybe this is an actor putting on a phony German accent? No. Mm-mm. Do you know how many times people said nein to Gerhard and didn't give me the information? Never. The more outlandish the ruse, the more believable it became. And that was the thing about being an actor that we were able to do. We could mimic, like we would hear people on CNBC, an executive, oh yes, my stock is going to do so well. And we would imitate, we'd record their voice, and then we would learn it, a couple of little mannerisms, and then we could call the firm imitating the CEO of that firm. And people would go, oh my God, I can't believe I have you on the phone. And of course, in my head, I was going, you don't. Right? That's
right. Anybody famous you can say that you actually impersonated?
That I would not want to say, right? Want to say.
Yeah. Keep that off the record, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, and in the book, I change all of the corporation names because part of the reason I'm able to write the book now is because the statute of limitations has expired for any potential crimes that I may have committed. But I still change the names of the companies because, as you can imagine, major technology firms, major Wall Street banks, major pharmaceutical companies, they have armies of attorneys on staff.
Yeah.
And if they wanted to make my life miserable, could make my life miserable. So I just said, you know what, I'm just going to change all the names. But if you really do your homework, you might be able to make a pretty good guess at some of those companies.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Yeah. So- So, you know, all your ruses, I mean, and when you were doing this back in the 80s and 90s, I mean, you're using telephone, pen and paper. I mean, we'd call that like old school hacking, right, these days. Now, thinking about like the technology we have with computers and smartphones, what can people learn from the techniques that you were using and how are those applicable to today?
Yeah. So, I mean, most of the spying I did was 90s into the aughts. And I think the things that apply, it's the same. When you get that email, when you get that text, when you get that, something that just doesn't look right, there's almost always an element of do this now, right? There's always this pressure of, you know, do this now. You need to click on this because your accounts have been shut down or your credit card has been this. You need to click on this and get it rectified. You need to click on this, you know, whatever the scam is. And that's the same thing we would play on to is we would create a crisis, an emergency, a time crunch. And that's why you need to do XYZ right now. And so I always tell people, that, you know, anytime there seems to be a time pressure and all of a sudden you feel pressured, that's a red flag. Anytime you feel pressured, don't respond. Don't tap the link. Don't do anything. You know, take your time, show it to a coworker, you know, email the liaison you have in tech that, you know, handles these things because they're going to be very happy that you reached out to them first before you clicked on that link, right?
So where can our listeners find out more about you and your book?
Thank you. I think the easiest thing is just to go to my website, www.robertkerbeck.com. You can buy the book there from anywhere you like to buy books from. I tell people, you know, as easy as Amazon is, Jeff Bezos doesn't need any more money from us. our local bookstores certainly do. And if we don't buy books from the local bookstores, they're not going to be there, right? So, and then also on the site, there are a lot of other cool things. The publisher did a trailer for the book, which again is about to become a TV show. So you can see the trailer, which is kind of cool.
Awesome.
And there's some other videos and things on there, other links to other things I've written that your audience, you know, they just might enjoy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've also, there was another book that you had authored. It was Malibu Burning, I believe is the name. And then you've done other writings as well. So.
Yeah. Malibu Burning was about the terrible fire in 2018 that wiped out, half of Malibu, 2/3 of my neighborhood. Wow. And my wife, child, and I, we fought the fire and we saved our house. And I got asked to write a book about that, and I did. And it was a real labor of love because, now I get a lot of notes from people saying, you know, not only thanks for writing the book, but I read this book and now I've made my home more fire safe because, I don't know where you guys live, but, you know, wildfires in New Mexico, wildfires in Colorado, wildfires in Oregon, Washington, Canada, Australia, right? The wildfire thing has really just exploded in the last, couple of years. And unfortunately, it's not going away. And there are a lot of simple things that homeowners can do to save their homes.
Awesome.
Or I like to say, give your home a fighting chance.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. Well, Robert, this has been great. I want to thank you for coming on the show. And of course, we'll have links to to find out more about Robert and all his books and everything that he's doing in our show notes. But definitely pick up this book. It was a great read. Definitely recommend it to our listeners. So again, thank you, Robert, for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.